CliffCentral.com.
All right, enough of that. I don't know. Pajoof. Let me tell you about this guy. Pajoof is a he's one of the top 100 motivational speakers in the world, and he's trained and spoken to over 200,000 people. So he knows what he's talking about. And we thought, you know what, it's January. A lot of people just need the right attitude to get stuck into the new year. And we thought, well, let's bring someone in who can help us along. Some of us are just having trouble waking up in the mornings and getting our day started. And you don't want to start January the wrong way. So we thought, well, we'll bring in a guy who's good at this, who's good at getting people up and moving and out of bed and doing important and impressive things. So here he is. Everybody get ready for a little bit of motivation. I know it's not a Monday, but Motivation Tuesdays is a thing too, if you want it to be. Right, Mubs?
Motivation every day.
Yeah, we don't discriminate.
Why not?
Yeah, we don't discriminate. If you and plus, I don't know a whole lot of people who don't want to feel better. I know lots and lots of people who definitely know they don't want to feel worse, and there can be nothing better for me than to get someone in here who's going to tell us about how we could start the year properly. Here he is. How are you, Pa? I love your name, by the way. Pajoof. Where is that from?
Originally from the Gambia.
The Gambia. That's a tiny little country.
That's a tiny little country. We've been quite prevalent on the news the last week. But yeah, it's the smallest country in Africa, smallest country in the world. And you know, I always say if you...
One of the smallest countries in the world. You're not Vatican City sizes, but it's tiny. You're completely surrounded by what country is it?
Senegal.
Senegal, that's right.
Senegal.
And it's basically just the river.
The river, yeah.
And the port.
And the port. Right? You got it, yes.
Wow, so that's where you come from.
Yep, I always say there's only 1.9 million of us, so if you see a Gambian, please cherish them, because I might do it. I'm the one you eat.
Be nice to them. All right. Very good. So tell us about how you got into this and what you're doing in South Africa, because I think a lot of people would be interested in what it is that you're up to here.
Yeah, I think I had the opportunity to come here like 4 years ago, and I fell in love with the country, with the people, what you guys hear about. And yeah, since then, I've been addicted.
Where do you spend most of your time?
I live in the UK.
Okay.
I was born in the UK.
I picked up a little accent there.
Yeah.
So you weren't even born in the Gambia, but your origins are there.
Origins in the Gambia. Yeah. At the age of six, my parents decided to go back home to the Gambia, and that's where it kind of like all started. So living in a bedroom with my parents, sharing a bedroom. I'm sleeping on the floor with my younger brother, lying down there dreaming that someday I'm going to make a difference. Success is not going to be a maybe, it's not going to be a should, it's going to be an absolute must. Because when I looked around my community, I saw a lot of people who had given up hope, who said, accepted, oh, we're a third world country. Poverty is just who we're going to be.
There are a lot of South Africans that have that attitude, you know? They're constantly feeling sorry for themselves. They don't see the future as being bright. They wake up every morning expecting the day to be worse than yesterday. That's a horrible way to live. But, I mean, how do you begin to help people like that?
Well, I think the first thing is sitting down there and saying, you know what? I don't want my life to be a warning. I want to be an example of what's possible. Mm-hmm. And that's what drove me. It said, if I can do it, I can show that it's possible. It just takes one person to step out of the status quo.
Right.
And I think that's the first thing. You've got to have a big enough reason why. Most people, I say, they settle. They settle for just to the 9 to 5 or just get paid a simple salary. You know, they just live in a little box. And I think if you settle for more, if you want to give more, if you want to be more, if you want to create something that is bigger than you, anything has happened. I always say the how is none of your business, but the why is pretty critical.
No, I mean, look, a lot of this stuff is stuff that, you know, people talk about, but it's very difficult to make practical sense of it. So the reason that a lot of people settle, I suppose, is because they would prefer security to the risk of doing something that everybody else isn't doing, or doing something that makes them stand out from the crowd, because there's danger in that. I mean, it's evolutionary. We can't help ourselves. We err on the side of caution because a lot of people have responsibilities, whether it's family, whether it's health, whether it's, you know, trying to make ends meet financially. And it's a lot more terrifying to put that stuff at risk and try to live what you're talking about, which is to, you know, break out of the mold and, you know, follow your dreams. And Some people are like, well, that's all good for Pajouf, but it's too much for me.
Well, here's the thing. Not doing something, I wouldn't call that security. I think most people think they're secure, but they're not. You know, like most people planning to say, look, I'm going to have a pension, or I'm waiting for the government to look after me when I'm old. It's not going to happen. You have to create your own future. You need to take control of your own life. And you need to create your own reality. And I think this idea of that we have job security, or by getting paid in a job, or our life is going to be secure by us just doing what we normally do on a day-to-day basis. Look, it's very simple. Most people wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
They go work in the job that they do not like.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what they're passionate about, but mm-hmm. they just have to do it to make ends meet. They come back home. They're so tired. They don't have time to spend with their kids.
Yeah.
They watch sometimes mindless television just to kill the day.
Yes.
And that's the routine. It's just the day in, day out.
That's so, no way to live.
That's no way to live. We're the most evolved species, you know. We're human beings. We're not human doings. We're not robots. And, you know, most successful people start their day after 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning.
The rest of the time, it's someone else's day they're working in.
There you go.
They're being part of. How did this happen for you, though? I mean, you mentioned how you were sleeping on the floor, you and your little brother, and you had these dreams. But how did you make those dreams become a reality? How did you decide, this is the kind of life I want for myself? And what were your first steps?
Well, the first steps was, my parents' plan was, Pa, first of all, we want to get you back into the UK so you can get a good education, get a good job, and come take care of us. That was kind of like their plan. And
you were going to work for them, basically.
More or less. and it was funny. I came back to the UK, and a year later when I arrived, my younger brother came to live with me. Mm-hmm. And I was about 15, 16 at the time, and I got an 11-year-old brother coming to live with me. He was practically forced upon me.
Yeah. And these parents of yours are a real work of art, huh?
They want you
to work for them. They want your brother to go and live with you. They want nothing to do with the responsibility.
They want me to sacrifice my teenage years.
Teenagers and the rest of your life supporting them.
There you go. But that turned out to be my biggest problem at the time. But what I realized, it was my biggest gift.
How so?
So when my brother came to live with me, I had no clue. I'm 16 years old. And yeah. You know, when you're 16, you know what, you want to enjoy life. It's the first time I've been away from my parents. I'm living on my own. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to do what a 16-year-old does at that time. But my brother came, and straight away I had what's called responsibility.
Ugh.
I had to be a role model. I had to look around. And the first 2 years, I did a dismal job. Sometimes I'll even abuse him. I hit him for no reason to show off to my friends that I have this responsibility. But what was funny is, I remember a time, this was 3 years later after he came down. I was not giving him that authentic love of being the role model I needed to be for him. And of course, we were living in a place in the UK called Hackney. It's the worst neighborhood you could ever live in at the time. And he started having friends and having other people who he can relate to. And before you know it, he fell into the wrong crowd. And I'll never remember that moment when he came back from school. And, you know, he has this habit of throwing his bag when he comes down, and a knife came out of his bag. And at that moment, I knew if I don't show up, he's not going to show up. If I don't become an example, he's not going to become an example.
Jeez.
And there and then, I started saying, well, how am I going to influence him? I always say this, if you can influence young people, you can influence anyone. And so his friends that he was hanging around, instead of telling him, look, don't hang around with XYZ, which I did, and it never worked. Mm-hmm. I said, how can I influence those people? Those his friends. And I started bringing them in. And before they know it, they were really, really taken by me. And they were like, wow, thank you. And then my brother seen that. He's saying, well, my brother must be cool. And that's how I started breaking the mold a little bit. And from there, I learned at a very young age of that this was my greatest gift. Your biggest problems in life can be your greatest gift. And most of us have something that happened to us at some point in life, and we stop dreaming. We stop setting those big goals because we're still having these limitations.
Yeah. You become cynical, right?
Jaded. You become jaded. And yeah, I just couldn't settle for that anymore. And it prepared me, and it made things so easy for me. And then from there on, I started finding this gift that I was able to inspire people by not telling them what to do, but being able to, for them to feel safe, to give them the belief that they're able to do it. Because when I share my story, that look, I'm from the Gambia, for crying out loud.
It's even worse than Hackney.
When I came back to the UK, I couldn't even speak correct English. I still can't speak.
It's not bad at all. I even pick up a little bit of an accent there.
There you go.
All right. Now, you see, the reason I asked you about your story is because a lot of people go, oh, well, these motivational speakers, they pitch up and they throw out all these liners.
One-liners.
You know, and they all speak the same language, basically, and some of them have better liners than others, and some of them just have a bigger reputation than others. But what I liked, and the reason I wanted to meet you, was because, first of all, you have a life story that's authentic and real, and that, I mean, your parents just thrust this little brother upon you. You ended up having to look after him, and you changed a whole bunch of his friends as well. When your brother grew up, was he grateful for this? Did he tell you, wow, you know, you changed my life? Did he end up being successful himself?
Well, the truth is, he changed my life.
yeah, I know. But you were the one who kind of brought him back in from the cold.
Yeah, definitely.
What ended up being his story?
Well, his story is he's kind of, to bring it full circle, well, he's 35 years old right now, and about 8 years ago, he had his first child, and he named his first child after me.
Wow.
So I think that was his way of saying he was grateful, because it was not easy, Gareth, you know?
No, sure.
It was not. I had to do the things that the parents needed to do at the time, and yeah, and I definitely, we're so close really right now. He currently lives in Saudi Arabia, actually, where he's teaching and doing some cool stuff out there. And he just went out there for a couple
of years. And those parents of yours, are they still waiting for you to bring home the bacon?
Absolutely.
They are?
Absolutely.
They're still going strong?
They're still going strong. They still live in the Gambia right now. And
are you supporting them?
Absolutely, I've got to support them.
Oh, so you've actually done, even though they kind of forced you into it, and that was their whole plan from the beginning. You end up doing that because you seem like you're one of those people who's very generous.
Well, I was brought up like that. You take care of your own, you look after your own, you look after your community. And, you know, my parents, I can never repay them for what they've done for me, because they gave me that biggest gift.
What, chasing you off back to the UK?
Absolutely.
All right. Now, when you go and you do these talks, what kind of people come to see you?
I have all sorts of people. Well, I do a couple of things. Obviously, I do the speaking. I do the coaching too also. Yeah. But from a speaking perspective, I see, like yesterday, we had a big event, at the, what's it, Pazzalo, Monte Cassino.
Palazzo, yeah.
Palazzo, Monte Cassino. So with a company called USB, it was a showcase, and they brought all these companies, these big companies there. And, so yesterday I had a big, a lot of different corporate clients. And on other times I have people who just want to close the gap from where they are, where they want to be. So entrepreneurs and managers and individuals who just want to better their life. So yeah, I can gift it to have the life that I have and been all around the world and spoken to all different people. But now the plan for me is to come back home to the continent.
Well, you're here in South Africa. And I mean, listen, we need as many smart people and as many hardworking people here as possible. And we need to stop making excuses, right? I mean, you've met enough South Africans now during this trip of yours and the previous ones that you've undertaken to know that South Africans, we tend to moan a lot. We complain endlessly about everything. It's always someone else's fault. It's the government. It's the weather. It's the stock markets. It's the West. It's whoever else we can find. It's never us.
Everything else but us.
Now, isn't this the biggest cause of our misery, is that we're unable to take, you know, personal responsibility for stuff? Do you agree?
I fully agree. Well, the truth is, this is not only a South African issue, you know, it's an issue on the continent, really, for example. I think here as Africa, as a continent, and I'll take my country now for an example in Gambia right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've listened to the news, but
tell me what's going on.
But Gambia, there's a political impasse right now where our current president has been ruling for 22 years with an iron fist, and
that sounds familiar.
Sounds familiar. And he lost the election on the 1st of December.
Let me guess, he didn't want to leave.
He didn't want to leave.
Yeah.
And now there's a threat of, in 2 days' time, there might be war in my country, which is a peaceful country, because he's refusing to step down. And But then I look at the issue and I said, everybody's getting angry. Everybody's saying, well, when he leaves, we gotta arrest him. He has to go to the IEC and all of that. And the problem that we have in Africa, I see, is not that, we've become very passive people. And that's why sometimes we create leaders who, when we have very strong leaders who want to hold on to power, it's because we have just settled. And I think if we just allow ourselves to understand that we are responsible, we have a voice, because most people have lost their voice a very long time ago.
Well, also, I mean, history hasn't been kind to our continent, and most people had a lot of their independent spirit beaten out of them by very oppressive colonial regimes and post-colonial regimes and, you know, these strong men who come along and tell us that actually we're just there to work for them, basically, and we should be happy with what freedoms they provide us. So I think a lot of people are psychologically beaten down, don't you?
Well, yes and no. I think the past happened for a reason, Gareth.
There's nothing we can do about it.
It's nothing we can do about it. I always say this, you know, the past happened and it's gone. It's there. The future is just a speculation. It's what you do right now. And whatever happened for us in the past, it's how can we take that and make it a gift and learn from it? You know, all the great people they heard of, you know, let's take Oprah Winfrey, for example. Mm-hmm. She had a horrible past, but she took it and made it something powerful. And now she's one of the most powerful women in the world. That's the difference between success and unsuccessful people.
It's triumphing over that adversity. We hear that over and over again. It's like an old trope, but it's true. It's like if you have had a tough time, that probably gives you more reasons to succeed.
Absolutely. How do you take your woos and turn them into wisdom?
Yeah. How do you help people to break through that, though? Because for some people, it's just easier to blame everybody else and to have the, you know, the excuses and to rather not take personal responsibility, because that means you have to look in the mirror every morning and go, it's totally up to you. There's no one else to blame.
Yeah.
A lot of people would want to blame the devil. A lot of people would want to blame the president, whoever it might be. Taking responsibility is hard.
It is hard, but if you have a big enough reason why, you'll do it. I'll give you an example really right now. Have you got siblings? Have you got people that you love in your life?
Sure.
Now, do you have, what's your biggest highway here, like a busy road?
No, the N1 between Pretoria and Johannesburg.
The N1.
We all now, hate it.
At rush hour, cars are going so fast. Would you cross the N1 for no good reason?
No. Some people do, though. Stupid people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and they get killed.
They get killed, right?
But so I wouldn't do it.
You wouldn't do it, right?
No.
But if you had a loved one the other way around, there's cars going 120 miles an hour, 200 miles an hour, but you're the only one who could go save them, and you have to cross during the peak time. Would you do it?
Peak time, it's like gridlock. Yeah, you just walk through.
Okay, but when cars are running at 200 miles an hour or 100.
No, I mean, how would you do that? You'd have to find a way.
You'll make it happen, right?
Yeah, I'd have to. If they were on the other side and they needed me, yeah, probably.
Is it probably or you will? So what?
I don't know. It depends how selfish I'm feeling on that.
Selfish feeling you're dead. Well, most people.
I'm not going to be much use to them dead, am I?
No, you're not.
No.
However, if you don't go over, they're going to die too. But most people will make that leap and go. What I'm just trying to point out is you have to find the leverage that will make people to want to say, look, if I'm going to stay where I am, to give them the pain to say, if I stay where I am, it's going to be harder than me not making the choice of moving to where I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's really that simple. So finding that why. So what I do at the events, I find a way of getting this leverage, because everybody, you know, if somebody's coming to paying to come to an event to see me or to see anyone else, they're there for a reason. That's the first change. To make the step to show up. You're going to show up in your life. The second step, whilst you're there, is, okay, what are you going to commit to?
Mm.
Yeah. And how are you going to hold yourself accountable to that? That's it. You know, there's sometimes I wake up in the morning, I don't want to get out of bed.
No, I know.
Seriously.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. We all feel like that.
Yeah. And it's sometimes people will, think, oh, you're Mr. Motivational. You got your life perfect. It cannot be far from the truth. I go through the same pains, the same things that people go through every single day. I question myself. I doubt myself. Here's the difference. How long do I wallow in that? How long do I stay there? Some people will stay there for 5 years, 10 years, a lifetime. Some people will stay there for a day. Some people, like me, maybe 2-3 hours.
You just snap out of it.
You got to snap out of it. That's it. That's the difference.
Like when you saw that knife fall out of your brother's bag.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I got to do something here. Well, listen, I mean, people are going to want to hear this stuff because that some people just can't find it in themselves until someone else helps them spark that. And that's not a weakness. It might just be an ignorance to certain things. It might even just be that there isn't enough motivation yet, that they haven't had that, what you call leverage. So this is how you can help people. Where are you going to be so people can come and see you?
So tonight, I leave tomorrow actually, but tonight we're doing an event in, I believe, in Cedar Woods of Santon and in Woodmead.
All right.
And we've got an event called Accelerate and Thrive. Accelerate and Thrive for 2017. How can you have your best year in 2017? So anyone who's around the area, you can come be my guest. Any of your listeners can come be my guest. And we start at kickoff at 6 o'clock and we'll be done by between 9:30 and 10. I say it's most people set up New Year's resolutions. You know, we're halfway in January and most people's New Year's resolutions are just a wish list.
That's right.
It's, you know, it's every year they just say this thing. I want to lose weight. I want to find the person I love. And, you know, I want to change my financial goals and everything like that. It's just a freaking wish list. If you want to make your goals really happen, I invite everybody to come to the session.
You'll help develop a plan of action.
Plan of action that you follow through on. That is just not motivation, because I think motivation just lasts 2 weeks and it washes off. And you.
Well, listen, man, it's a pleasure to meet you. I've never met anyone from the Gambia before, so I'm delighted about that. I hope your country sorts out its nonsense and this president of yours gets the hell out of the way, as he should.
I hope so, too.
And love to those parents of yours who shipped you off to go and support them. Good for them.
You.
That's a good pension plan.
That's a good pension plan.
You are a good pension. You make good money out of motivational speaking?
I meet good people, yes, and I think when you meet good people, you do. I do well for myself.
Make good connections.
I make good connections.
And connections lead to business. And
absolutely. So I'm quite privileged from that part.
No, that's important. And being able to connect with people is a skill you can learn.
And I always say money is a silent applaud of a job well done. And you help more people, you'll never be poor.
There we go. That should help people get figured out in terms of what their goals are for 2017. Thank you very much. Pajouf, everybody. Did I say that right? Is it Pajouf?
You got it.
Is it right?
You make me feel special when you say it, actually. You say it with such power.
There we go. Pajouf!
There you go.
Damn right. All right, man. Thank you.
Thank you. CliffCentral.com.